This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 82 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, didn't we just do this?
It was just a few days ago, but, you know, a lot of things have happened. There's a lot of responses out there now to the NPRM from the FAA on commercial use of small UAS. And I think we've got some good topics here.
Folks, if you don't want to listen to about NRPMs, or NPRMs, I would say turn off your stereo now. But you've heard what we thought about it, our initial reaction. So I guess we're going to talk about, overall, the industry's pretty happy, but there are some disappointments and some challenges. And it's been an interesting couple of days, and it looks like we're moving forward. Now, we'll start this at the beginning of the show, is listen to what the other people have said, and don't forget, the clock is ticking now that you have a chance to tell the FAA what you think. It's not often you get to do that. So craft those emails and send the feedback. Well, of course, for documents related to the small UAS NPRM, visit www.regulations.gov and search for docket FAA-2015-0150.
That's right. And that takes you to the FAA documents page for operation and certification of small unmanned aircraft systems. Now, there's a lot of documents up there now as we record this. However, at this moment, the actual NPRM isn't up there. It shows as being pending publication in the Federal Register. But it should be up soon, and you can check the show notes for a PDF of the NPRM.
So, overall, we weren't alone about being happy, were we, Max?
No, it seems that pretty much from all quarters, as reported in the press, organizations are pretty satisfied with the NPRM. Maybe that's not exactly the best way to say it. Maybe the way to say it, David, is that they were pleased to find that it didn't include some of the draconian measures or restrictions that some of them had feared.
Agreed. I think that's a good statement that, you know, this is definitely a case of we were prepared for the worst and we got better than that. So maybe that does help the tone, but overall, I still think it's not bad. Our first story comes from CNET.com. FAA's liberal proposed rules win allies in drone business. The article does go on to talk about the balance between innovation and safety taken with the FAA and the fact that the FAA recognized the economic ramifications of this industry and the potential of the growth and jobs and overall revenue.
That's
due
right.
To small UAVs.
And we see a quote from John Resnick. He's the policy and marketing representative in Washington for DJI. And he says, "We are very pleased the FAA is taking a reasonable and practical approach to integrating commercial UAS into the national airspace. We are very encouraged and stand ready to collaborate with the FAA to implement common sense proposals as quickly as possible."
And in the same article, Mark Dombroff from the law firm of McKenna, Long and Aldridge said, quote, "My concern is that there will be people entering the UAS business who are attracted by the potential economics. This really requires aggressive monitoring and enforcement by the FAA to ensure that the rules are observed." Well, yeah, that's true. And the question is then who's going to do the enforcement? And that's one of the questions that have come out of this is, but technically, folks, there still isn't any rules to enforce. The rule is, unless you have an exemption, don't go flying commercially.
Now, one way to think about the enforcement issue is that the FAA already does enforce regulations for manned aircraft. So some could say, well, why not just employ the same, you know, the same thing for unmanned? What's the difference? And I think there is a difference. I think that the manned aviation with pilot certifications and things is, well, it's at a much higher professional level. That sounds kind of bad, and I don't mean that, you know, commercial use of drones currently is at an unprofessional level, but it's, you know, it's at the very beginning. And so it may be difficult for the people involved in the industry, involved in commercial drone usage. It may be difficult for them to kind of understand what their responsibilities and obligations are with respect to the regulations that will come someday. So I don't know how it's going to shake out, David. There may be kind of a transition period, but ultimately I like to hope that it could operate just as efficiently and as effectively as manned aviation.
And for the comments against the unprofessionalism, the address is max@theuavdigest.com.
I'm in trouble.
Agreed. It's going to be a learning curve for everybody. And I think that's an indication of the additional comments that we'll hear further on down the line. Again, folks, it's a proposal. I think we don't stress that enough, that some people are making the leap that these are the final rules, and no, they are subject to change. That's why we have this proposed rulemaking, so that they might change. Our next article comes from Fortune.com. As you can see, the mainstream media picked up on this big time.
They sure did. Boy, you know, articles, mainstream media, CNN, the television networks.
Are you kidding? NBC Nightly News, ABC, CBS. Even my local ABC affiliate had a segment on it. It was kind of funny watching one of the local anchors talking about small UAVs. It just didn't seem right. And they didn't call me to talk about it, which I was kind of disappointed about. So this was new rules the FAA and drone industry make up. Didn't know that they had broke up. But drone advocates let out a collective sigh of relief as new commercial drone regulations are more industry-friendly than expected.
Yeah, and really in this Fortune article, they're pointing out that maybe the most surprising thing about all this was the lack of surprises. But Fortune says, quote, "The FAA is far more in tune with industry needs than many imagined." And they call that a promising sign. And here again, we see some interesting quotes from different organizations.
Matthew Bisecki, the president of the UAS America Fund, says, quote, "I think the FAA is a tremendously difficult job to do, and I think what they came out with over the weekend was surprising. It was less conservative than a lot of people for the industry thought it would be." I think you had the right term earlier, Max. People were really expecting draconian and really expecting a giant no-fly zone, and the fact that they came out with reasonable expectations, I think, shocked a lot of people.
Yes, and some of that perception of what might be coming could have been inferred from this Section 333 exemption process, how difficult and lengthy it was and kind of laden with so many requirements. And many of us thought that, hey, maybe that's a model that the FAA is going to use for the regulation proposal, but it wasn't. And in fact, Lisa Ellman, who's the counsel and co-chair of the UAS practice group at the D.C. office of McKenna, Long, and Aldridge, she said people feared that the new process would look like the Section 333 exemption process, up to including the private pilot's license requirement. So this is a huge, wonderful thing, this new UAS operator's certificate. It will be relatively easy to get and will make drones broadly accessible. And I think I agree with her on that.
The FAA did a good job. They did the right thing. The triple tray, as the old Marine squadron called it, the triple tray exemption, is difficult right now for anyone to get. And it's growing pains, and I think the FAA didn't want to deal with the bureaucracy that it was creating. Brendan Schulman, a friend of the show, head of the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Practice in New York, and that's the law firm of Kramer, Levin, Nafalis, and Frankel, says there are aspects of the notice that the FAA did get wrong. One was academic research looks to be operating under commercial operations, and that's a problem.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I think we were hopeful that, and I think this is what Schulman is thinking, is that academic research would kind of be given a maybe a separate category or somehow.
Oh, you just didn't want to say exemption, did you?
I know, an exemption. Oh, dear. Because he's thinking, you know, this is a little bit stifling for research. And when you're building a new industry and when you're looking at competitiveness worldwide, it's that kind of research that you really want to allow to flourish. And this is kind of still restrictive in that area. Another one he mentioned was the height, the maximum height of 500 feet, also not flying at night. And he thought that there are rural areas where that really isn't a problem. I guess yeah, that may be true, but I don't know. How do you start to map out and say, well, okay, there's a this height restriction here, that height restriction there. Here's how we define, you know, where it's not a problem, what's rural or not. That in practice, I think that might be kind of difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I think a standard is a standard, and 400 feet or 500 feet is reasonable. Then Brendan, of course, brought up probably the biggest negative I've heard from a lot of the industry, and that is delivery by drone.
Mm.
Air carriage to be subject to heightened regulatory standards outside the UAS proposal. That's a legal distinction that made sense in manned aircraft era, but I'm not sure why we're holding on to it. It strikes me as a real blow to Amazon and other companies that have been working on drone delivery products. Part of that was they did not approve beyond line of sight, and they did not approve first-person vision, FPV. For flight, and you need to be able to do that if you're going to have drones. It's kind of pointless having your delivery drone being chased out by you down the street so you can deliver by drone.
Yeah, and all the while not flying over people, which is another restriction in the NPRM. But here again, at this point, I don't know that the FAA, how come I'm defending the FAA so much this episode? I don't think at this point there is really anything else they could do. We don't have the technologies, we don't have the safety standards in place, I think, that allow you to start flying drones over crowds of people.
Is your suddenly name changed to Rob?
I know. This is, I feel really awkward at this, but, you know, I guess I'm trying to think of it in terms of what is realistic and what is reasonable. And flying over crowds of people right now, we just don't have a way to deal with that, with failures of the drones, failures of the communication system. Yeah, it's not fail-safe enough, I don't think, at this point in time. And with regard to package delivery, I mean, think about it. There are a lot of packages that get delivered, and we can't have the skies darken with quadcopters delivering Amazon packages because there's no way to ensure that they don't run into each other, that they don't run into buildings or trees or, you know, I just don't think we're there yet.
Your skies darkening with quadcopters, all of a sudden I started to hear Ride of the Valkyries and, you know, and I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Folks, it's a proposal. They weren't going to touch everything, and it really did we want them spending another 8 months to a year trying to get the rest of it in? Let's get started and move on. And you know what? Why doesn't Amazon just apply for an exemption like everybody else does?
Yeah, the fact that Amazon.com, the fact that Google and that all the others who are looking at package delivery, they're testing, right? They're learning how to do it. And that's because we don't know how to do it right now. And we certainly don't know how to do it in vast numbers. It's not scalable. What we have right now is not scalable. So there's a lot of research that needs to be done, a lot of technology that needs to be developed. And so I think it's reasonable to say at this point that you can't do it, right? You can't do it commercially until we figure out how, from a technical standpoint and from a regulatory standpoint. So I don't have a problem with that. CNBC kind of talks about this in an article, Amazon drone plans shot down by authorities. And they bring out these same issues. They also note that Amazon has been testing. They have an indoor facility in Washington State, and they really would like to get outside to do trials there. But there's an interesting quote from an Amazon vice president.
Yeah, and that would be Paul Meisner. Quote, the FAA needs to begin and expeditiously complete the formal process to address the needs of our business and ultimately our customers. We are committed to realizing the vision of Prime Air and prepared to deploy where we have the regulatory support we need.
That means going outside. That's a threat. That's almost a threat.
It's a threat. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed in Amazon. They are literally threatening the FAA, and I don't think I think we've come to realize that the FAA doesn't deal well with threats, and they don't have any problem saying no. So they're not being cooperative partners with the FAA. I think it's kind of sad that Amazon's taking that tact. You know, if they'd actually work with the FAA, they might actually get more done.
Yeah, the results may be better.
The Small UAV Coalition, so that would be www.smalluavcoalition, all one word, .org, applauds the FAA's release of proposed UAS rule as a good first step for the industry. And this was their press release. Quote, we applaud the FAA for creating a flexible framework that appears to be risk-based, as we have advocated and focused on the technological capabilities of UAVs, rather than simply adapting a set of rules from those currently governing manned aircraft.
Great statement. Yeah, agreed.
I mean, like you said, a great statement. And unfortunately, it was the dread we were feeling was, oh God, how are they going to take your average run-of-the-mill pilot's certificate and then try to get people to become drone operators to do that? And that was one of the other comments that came out in the ruling was, they're not going to be pilots, they're going to be operators.
Right. Now, they also go on to say in the press release that they support the FAA's proposal not to require an airworthiness certificate for small UAVs and to eliminate any requirement for a pilot to obtain manned aircraft flying experience or a medical exam. But they do have some issues that they raise with regards to the NPRM, and they outline some of these in this press release.
The first one would be the proposal would not allow any operation over any person not directly involved in the operation. Operations with the visual line of sight should be permitted over persons, provided the operator has passed the knowledge test. We want to film sports stadiums.
Yeah.
And I get it. I understand that for a lot of videographers, this is kind of important, but I don't know. We've already seen people crash quads into audiences, and filming something. So I know the FAA is being a little cautious on this one, but if you're in this industry and you really believe that that's one of the ones that maybe you need to find a good case for, I know my friend Parker, our friend Parker, friend of the show, talks about, when I was learning to fly his hexacopter, he had kids stay who wanted to watch, but they stayed on the other side of the park we were flying in, and told them that if any of them came closer, the airplane would land, or the drone would land on the ground, and they all stayed and watched and were very happy. but we never flew it over those people. Right. So it's one of those things that, yeah, I have mixed emotions about it. I get why people want to do it. I just don't know. Have we gotten over cautious, Max? I think we're always erring on the side of caution.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I bounced my quadcopter off the wall so many times. I just don't know. I know there are better operators or pilots out there than I am, but it's kind of a scary thing.
Mm. Well, the second item on the small UAV coalition's list is testing on private property. The proposal doesn't say anything about allowing companies to test on private property near their facilities. The small UAV coalition notes that, testing is essential, they say, and this would be reasonable, I guess. That's kind of an interesting one.
But it goes back to that 500-foot, 400-foot argument, you know, that Brandon talked about, people in rural areas being able to fly higher than that. You got to have some sort of standard. And what's the definition of private property? And, you know,
how much space? So that's a difficult one, I think.
I don't have a real opinion on that. But it does go back to academia wanting to fly them, and, you know, we've set up UAV test sites, so people should be able to test at those test sites. Number three for them was the proposal would limit operations to the period after sunrise and before sunset. Small UAVs should be permitted to operate at any hour of day or night if it can be done responsibly and safely. Okay, I'm good with that if you can prove the end of that last statement, which is it's going to be done reasonably and safely.
And what's the mechanism to ensure that at this point in time? On the issue of operating at night, I think it's, you know, unless you've got some big strobes going or something, it's difficult to maintain line of sight. But it's also difficult to see other objects that may be in the space where you're flying. I'm a little bit nervous about night flying at this point.
The fourth proposal would limit operations to 500 feet AGL. We believe the FAA should allow operations at higher altitudes with appropriate safeguards, although we do agree that a requirement to keep an artificial distance from an airport is not risk-based.
Kind of similar. Yeah. Ultimately, yeah, great. Higher altitudes are desirable. At this point in time, when we talk about appropriate safeguards, if you go higher than 500 feet, now you're mixing it up with, well, first with helicopters and then with fixed-wing aircraft. And the appropriate safeguards for co-locating drones and manned aircraft in the national airspace don't exist. We don't have those. So, yeah, as an ultimate objective, yeah, sure. As something that the FAA can propose at this point in time, I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, we were contacted by USA Today this week, you and I, Max, and they wanted to know about whether we what our opinions were on sense and avoid technology, and we both agreed that while the technology is coming, it's not mature yet. And I think basically we need that technology if we're going to go up above 500 feet to get to be mature and in the point scalable that it can go into a small UAV. I mean,
right.
Right now it's not there yet, but it doesn't mean it's not coming, and we're very optimistic about it. In fact, I'm going to try to get someone who's working on it on another scalable sense and avoid technology. We might be able to get them as a guest. And last but not least, how about number five?
Yeah, visual line of sight. So the coalition says first-person view technology is available now and is critical to unleashing the power of automation in this space. I think it is critical. I think it does unleash a lot of power in this space. But there again, I'm not sure that the existing technology is sufficient. It does seem pretty good, but maybe of all these things, this is one where maybe with some good feedback to the FAA, we might be able to make some progress on. I don't know. What do you think, David?
Yeah, this is the one that I'm sort of disappointed in, but I understand their thinking. This is one that I hope we get some really good arguments for first person and beyond line of sight GPS navigation, because I've seen it work. It seems like it's far more mature technology than we were talking about for like sense and avoid and such. But again, the FAA was being a little conservative and risk sensitive, but I think that's okay. I have a feeling that this will be broadened out, hopefully, by the comments in the NPRM.
Hmm. And once again, and we've said it several times, we'll probably say it several more. The ball is in our court right now. At least that's my opinion. And that the FAA has put a straw man out there and proposed some regulations. They're not perfect. They're not as bad as they could have been, and they may be lacking in some areas. But this is the point now where we all who have an interest in doing this well get to voice our concerns, suggestions, opinions, and so forth to the FAA through this NPRM process. And so this is, it's like voting, David. You know, if you don't vote, you know, you can't criticize what you end up with. Well, similarly, if you don't make your views known to the FAA on these subjects, then you can't complain about what we end up with.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. Now, just quickly, kind of at about the same time, President Obama has released a presidential memorandum. And this is from AUVSI News. President Obama calls for transparency in UAS privacy memo. This is a memo that he issued to the heads of the executive departments and agencies on February 15th, and it's titled Promoting Economic Competitiveness While Safeguarding Privacy, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties in Domestic Use of Unmanned Aircraft Systems. And it kind of touches on those particular topics, competitiveness, privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties, and provides some directions to the government agencies.
First of all, he notes the economic value of integrating the UAS into the national airspace and how transformative it'll be. Mm-hmm. Quote, as UASs are integrated into the NAS, the federal government will take steps to ensure the integration takes into account not only our economic competitiveness and public safety, but also the privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties concerns these systems may raise.
And he issues some orders to different groups. I think the best thing is to take a look at the link in the show notes, and you can pull up the PDF and go through some of this as well. But I think that this is got a lot of good things in here.
This is the ruling for the general public, folks. This is for people who are worried that your quadcopter is going to spy on them in their bedroom window. And I think there's some good stuff here. Take some time to read it. Maybe in a future episode, Max and I will go back and touch on it. But I think, Max, we're running a little long. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we should talk about our video of the week this time, David.
Yeah, I put this video of the week in for all of our Australia listeners who liked to gloat that they were 14 degrees the other day. That would be that funky centigrade measurement. And today we had a wind chill of negative 15 degrees, and that was in Fahrenheit. So NBC News shot a drone video, which I don't know. Is that a commercial use for a drone?
Yeah, sure. absolutely. Absolutely.
So I guess the FAA will be talking to NBC, but they shot images over Niagara Falls with a UAV of it being frozen solid. So in case of all of you people who listen to us worldwide who don't understand the pain and suffering that Max and I are going through this winter as far as the cold goes, this video should give you an example of what we're dealing with at least this week.
And it's really a spectacular video. And you know, David, maybe they're shooting from the Canadian side. Maybe that's what they did.
They did, actually. They did shoot from the Canadian side, come to think of it. So maybe the CASA or CASA. I'm thinking Australia, but maybe they did have the exemption from Canada. So, but it's definitely worth looking at because it's not something you see often. It's not often that Niagara Falls and all of its mighty and force freezes solid. So, fun video.
All right. With that, we want to thank you for listening to this episode of the UAV Digest, episode 82. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com, and you can go straight to the show notes if you use the shortcut, the UAVDigest.com/82.
And of course, you can join us on social media. Our Twitter account is UAV Digest, at UAV Digest. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/UAV Digest. Of course, you can send us email, which is feedback@theUAVDigest.com. Or, of course, you can reach out to either Max or I. Just replace the word feedback with the word Max or David. And, of course, leave us some feedback if you listen to us on iTunes. It's how people can find us. We have a growing listenership, and we really appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to us ramble on, in this case, twice an hour this week. And stream us to Stitcher.com. If you'd like to purchase some swag, we have a Cafe Press site, which is cafepress.com/theUAVDigest. Or you can become a patron to the show to help support us, which is patreon.com/theUAVDigest. The last two links are also, if you go to theuavdigest.com and click their respective buttons, you go directly to those sites. So with that, I guess I should say it's cold, and I'd like to call it a night, Max. So this is David in freezing Philly,
and Max in, let's see, what starts with an H? Well,
cold as hell, Hartford.
Hey, a heck of a cold Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everybody.